We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
Brian Burns to the house!
This one is picked again. Intercepted by Boston.
Bridgewater, throw into the end zone. Touchdown!
Samuel, still on his feet, inside the five, to the end zone. Touchdown! What a play!
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. One, two, three.
Keep pounding.
All right, Panthers fans, welcome to another edition of the Roar Podcast. We are joined tonight by a special guest from Cover 2 Broncos and at Mile High Report. It's Joe Rouse. He writes for the Broncos and does a lot of good analysis on the Denver side. Billy and I are pleased to be joined by Joe tonight. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And of course, we're lucky to be playing another game this week. It looks like we got a lot of activity on the COVID side from the Panthers in, and I know that Denver just came off quite an interesting run of COVID troubles of their own on the quarterback side. I guess let's just start there. Talk about, the last 2 weeks for this Broncos team. Of course, what they dealt with going into that Saints game with the quarterback situation and Kendall Hinton having to play. And then last week, coming back impressively and almost taking down the Chiefs. Where do you think this team is trending moving forward?
Yeah, it's been kind of an interesting 3 weeks just because the Broncos kind of upset Miami and they kind of laid the blueprint down for a potential offensive game plan to really kind of build on, only to lose all their quarterbacks at the last minute against the Saints. Part of it was just Jeff Driscoll came up on the COVID list, but they were in a meeting together. And then because the players didn't all have their masks on, the NFL ruled that they were all considered high risk. And so the game went on without a hitch, but the Broncos had to find a quarterback. And they had no quarterbacks available, so they signed a practice squad receiver who had played quarterback his freshman year in college. It went exactly how you expected it to go. it was actually really interesting because I didn't know how they were going to be able to kind of come back from that to rebuild the game plan to try and knock off the Chiefs. But to their credit, they basically almost did it. And the game plan, they looked fairly similar to what they did against Miami. Not quite as much pin and pull, but in terms of kind of ground and pound, play action, control the ball, protect the quarterback as much as you can, and then just play defense. So it's been an interesting couple weeks for sure. I think in terms of overall, kind of have to wait and see how these last four games go. I think the Broncos, I can't speak for everybody, but I know for me, you look at the Broncos and it looks like they basically, they had a defense and a running game that was capable of playing with the Chiefs. They had maybe four or five plays that didn't go their way. And then they just had limitations at the quarterback position.
Yeah. And let's stick with that quarterback position, Joe. What is a situation like for Drew Lock? I know Denver went into this offseason building around him. They drafted Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler. They re-signed Garrett Bowles recently. So they've put together, and obviously I forgot to mention they hired Pat Shurmur for however well we think he's doing. But I think the perception, especially on the outside, is that this offseason was tailored for Denver to really figure out if Drew Lock is a franchise quarterback. And we're now 13 weeks through the season. What has been your evaluation of him? And do you think he has a chance to be the long-term answer for this franchise?
Well, I think the outside perception is right on the money. Basically all season long, I've said this entire season, the only thing that really matters is Lock. Because they went into the season basically trying to eliminate every single mistake you could or every single excuse you could for why Drew Lock would fail. So like if he failed, it was on him. And granted, injuries, COVID, everything else has kind of gotten in the way of that to a degree. But I do think the Broncos, in terms of a plan, the plan made sense. They did everything they could to put him in a position to succeed and to properly evaluate what he can do to kind of go from there, because then they can kind of see, do we need another quarterback next year? In terms of where I'm at with it, I need to see more of these next four games to feel comfortable going forward with Lock as an unquestioned starter. If it's up to me at this point, I would say if the season ended today and the Broncos have the ability to draft a quarterback, I would probably look to do so.
And Joe, we're continuing with Joe Rouse here, Broncos analyst and insider. Joe, talk to us about this receiving core. Of course, the tight ends as well, but particularly Jerry Jeudy in his first season, looking impressive at times. What type of difficulty does this particular group, not only from the receiving core, but from the tight end core, present in terms of coverages for an opposing defense?
Yeah. Well, Jerry Jeudy, I mean, he's as advertised in terms of his route running. He's had some issues early in the season with catches. He had a couple drops. But again, if you watched a lot of his Alabama tape, it's not altogether surprising that he had a couple drops, stuff like that. The biggest issue he's had in recent weeks is just kind of connecting with Lock, because Shurmur doesn't necessarily design his offense to get one person open. He doesn't scheme receivers open so much as he puts it on the quarterback to find the cover, like find who is open against the coverage. And Lock doesn't always find Jeudy. So, but in terms of like how it presents an issue for the Panthers, I would say what makes the receiving core of the Broncos so difficult is that they kind of have a skill, like they have a little bit of everything. Tim Patrick, I know he's not a big name, but he's 6'4", 205 to 210 pounds. He's kind of your prototypical X receiver where he can win above the rim. He's not necessarily super quick or shifty, but he's fast enough in a straight line, and he's pretty good on comeback routes. And the Broncos have started to feature him more and more. Pat Shurmur does like to throw ISO fades into the red zone, and Tim Patrick's probably their best receiver for those. The other guy who really has started to come on, especially in recent weeks, is KJ Hamler. His role, he actually played more snaps last week than Jerry Jeudy, I believe. And he's playing a lot in the slot. They're using him on shifts. They're using him as a jet sweep guy. He's made some tough catches. It's not really his game to catch the ball above the rim. Just because he's so small, his catch radius is kind of limited by it. but he's really, really difficult to defend one-on-one. And he's done the little things, and that's really stood out to me. In terms of the tight end group, the Broncos lost Albert O earlier this season, so they're down essentially to Noah Fant, Nick Vinette, who's more of a blocker, but he'll catch the occasional ball, but he's mostly a blocker. And then they have Troy Fumagalli and Andrew Beck. Andrew Beck is kind of a fullback. He'll play some H-back, play a little bit tight end, mostly fullback. Troy Fumagalli is mostly a guy. Noah Fant, he's playing through an injury, but he is an athletic mismatch, and he could present issues. Just because, again, he's a 4'5" athlete, and he's 6'4", 6', you know, he can run, he can move, he's big, he can play bully ball. He's not really a great blocker. He's an effort blocker, but he's not a good blocker. So if they leave him against Brian Burns, that could definitely be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, just speaking to this match, I mean, just looking forward to it. And obviously, we don't know the situation with the Panthers and how they're addressing COVID. It looks like Derek Brown is on the list, but I can't be too sure. For Carolina, at least, their defense is it's set up in a way to prevent explosive plays. And John and I have gone over this at length. And when I look at the Broncos receiving core in particular, like you mentioned, Judy, Hamler, Patrick, and even Noah Fant, and their running backs, I'm not sure how much they use them in the pass game, but yeah, for me, I'm not too worried about those guys going over the top because Carolina should be prepared for that. What I'm mostly worried about, especially in this game, is if Denver starts becoming a little more if they're Drew Lock is taking what the defense gives him, essentially, because there's going to be openings in the middle of the field and even the short game, if he decides to check down, if one of the running backs decides to have a big game in that regard. My question for you is that something that you've seen from this offense to where if they're not connecting with the receivers, that potentially the tight ends and running backs can really become a big factor in the game? Because those are areas where I think Carolina's defense will it will allow Denver's offense to gain yards down the field.
Yeah, and that's definitely one of those things where I'm looking to see if Locke is able to do that, because that has been an issue up until now. The Miami game, he did a good job. In the last couple of weeks, they've really de-emphasized drop back passing altogether. Against Miami, not as much, but against the Chiefs, outside of 2-minute situations against the Chiefs, so like the last 2 minutes of the first half, the last 2 minutes of the end of the game situations, 16 of 20 of Drew Lock's attempts came off of either play action or with some sort of motion. Most of it was play action. And from there, basically both games, it's basically been boot action, a lot of rollouts, and Locke will have somebody coming across from the backside that's deeper or a tight end right in front of him. He'll take the tight ends. Like he's shown a lot of progress there, because in the early part of the season, he wasn't even doing that. But I mean, he'll miss open checkdowns all he's done it throughout this season. So it is one of those things where I'm really looking to see if he's able to do that, because I expect the Panthers to take away the deep shots. And I do think Noah Fant, and I do think Melvin Gordon's not a special receiver, but he's a viable outlet receiver. But Noah Fant could make some problems after the catch if he gets the ball in space. KJ Hamler is quite good in space if he can get the ball. But Drew Lock is – He struggled with it, and it's at this point where Pat Shurmur started to take a lot of horizontal leading routes out of the playbook altogether. The Broncos, as of now, or last I talked to Seth Galina before the Chiefs game from PFF, and according to PFF's numbers, the Broncos attempt horizontal leading throws like meshes, routes, crossers, stuff like that, I think it's 25th in the league, and Locke is basically the last graded quarterback at that stuff. So he's just not doing a very good job of it. He's a see it, throw it passer. So he does a really poor job of leading receivers if they're not already wide open. And the Broncos have tried to accommodate that, but it's one of those things where that is an issue against this Panthers team.
Hey, we're talking to Joe Rowles, Denver Broncos insider, right here on the Roar podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. Joe, talk to me about this front on the defense for Denver. Of course, Von Miller dealing with an injury. He's missed extended time now. They'll know about his future in terms of the short term. But at least looking on the surface, I haven't had a chance to look at Denver's tape too much, but just looking at their run defense in particular, like three of the last 6 weeks, they've given up over 200 on the ground. I know the circumstances were unique against New Orleans for that, obviously with Taysom running, the rush attack from his end. But can you speak to what the challenges have been for this front seven in terms of defending the run and maybe where they can shine a little bit? Are there some strong points that we're missing in terms of maybe the pass rush or any other areas that I'm just not seeing?
No, yeah. So one of the big problems that start – well, like six games as a sample, there's kind of a couple different parts to it. Part of it is the Broncos have started to lose a lot of defensive tackles. Their depth is being tested pretty badly. Shelby Harris came back last week off the COVID list, and that was the first time he had come back. I think it was in 4 weeks. Like, so he's missed a big chunk of the season because he was having issues with like a nerve pain. So he's their best defensive tackle. They lost Jarrell Casey early in the season. They lost their nose tackle about the middle of the season. So at one point in that stretch, they were down to their Draymond Jones and then basically guys they were picking up off the street and playing. So that's part of it. The other thing is the two games against the Chiefs, the Broncos really sold out against the pass. So they kind of just were letting the Chiefs run the ball. But also, yeah, their run defense has definitely slipped in recent weeks in part because of the depth issues up front. Alexander Johnson, their middle linebacker, he is an elite run defender. So if you're running at him, that's probably going to be a tough out. Josie Jewell has been decent, the other linebacker, but he's decent. He's not on the same level as Johnson is. Bradley Chubb has done better. He's their edge rusher. And he's probably the biggest name on the Broncos front outside of Von Miller now. He's done good. The Broncos have started to rotate him into a little bit more off-ball stuff, just as like a pressure package type of situation. But he's also the best edge rusher. And then Malik Reed, he's kind of an unsung hero because he's an undrafted free agent from last year. But he's capitalized on the opportunities that have kind of come up because a lot of people, if you remember watching Vic Fangio with the Bears, you'll remember that the Bears didn't really blitz much. They played a lot of zone coverage. They just rushed four and they tried to kind of sit back and let you go the length of the field because they knew they'd win over time. This Broncos team is not like that. They are quite aggressive. I would expect them to run a lot of stunts. I would expect a lot more blitzing. They'll run some simulated pressures where Alexander Johnson or Josie Jewell will come, but one of the edge rushers will drop off. That usually happens when the Broncos are in base personnel. So if Joe Brady comes out and with two backs in the backfield, two tight ends or anything like that, I could see quite a bit of that. When they go into nickel situations, a lot of times they'll send a nickel blitzer and then they'll drop an edge off the other side. They'll use Justin Simmons to replace. So that's kind of like Fangio's defense. This is the weirdest Fangio defense I've studied just because this is the most aggressive Fangio defense I've studied. I know he did it way back when, but in the time, like since like the 49ers and the Bears, he hasn't really done that.
One thing I'm curious about with this defense, especially a few weeks ago when they shut down Miami, what specifically did you see in that game that allowed them to really frustrate that offense? And obviously Tua is a rookie. So I think there are some similarities between Tua's game and Teddy Bridgewater as far as how they like to distribute the football. What did you see in that game that kind of really frustrated Miami?
Yeah. The big thing was the edges were really winning. Malik Reed and Bradley Chubb just completely pooped on the Miami Dolphins tackles. And I don't know if that's going to happen this time because I think Taylor Moten's pretty good. They could try and attack the other side perhaps, but I don't think that's going to be quite the same. I do think the Broncos will try and rush more inside just because they will use Bradley Chubb on stunts quite a bit where they'll have him starting outside and then, you know, obviously move inside, with probably Shelby Harris, if he's healthy, kind of coming out. But in terms of like what they did against Tua that really worked, a lot of it was the simulated pressure stuff. Because again, they'll use Justin Simmons as a fill. So they'll send somebody out of the, like off the nickel, and they'll have Justin Simmons rotate down. And Tua had a couple different plays where he had a wide open receiver. He was hesitating because he had Simmons creeping. And he didn't know if he could get the ball in. One time he did squeeze a ball to Mike Gesicki and he just got blown up because Simmons was right there. But a lot of it, yeah, was the edges just completely wrecking the game.
Yeah, and I guess it remains to be seen. I think Russell Okung, he's been he's had issues with injuries throughout the year. Mm-hmm. But it does look like he will be healthy. And Moton, as you said, he's been pretty good. And one more thing I just want to point to, especially we don't know the status of Curtis Samuel and DJ Moore. I do expect Samuel to play because from the reporting that I've seen, it looks like he was a close contact, which means that he's eligible to play. DJ Moore, he was already suffering an injury, not too severe, but he was placed on the COVID. I think he actually got it. So he's, I would say 99% out. I just need to see some type of confirmation that he did actually get it. But what is going to be the situation with Denver's secondary? Yeah. Justin Simmons, we know, is an elite safety. He's going to get paid a lot of money this offseason, whether it's by Denver or another franchise. AJ Boye, he was recently just suspended, and I'm not even sure how Kareem Jackson, I think, is still playing for them.
Yep.
Will Parks, I know they claimed him. This is a very interesting unit because it's difficult to play corner in Fangio system. And one guy in particular that I'm seeing, Isaac Yiadom, he plays for another team now. And I know he was not good in Denver, but from what I'm seeing now, he looks to be, playing pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's not crossing my mind which team he plays for, but what is it about this secondary that places a lot of stress on them, and how do you expect them to respond?
So a lot of it, my understanding, I had Cody Alexander, Coach A, he wrote Match Quarters on before the season because I really wanted to pick his brain on that because I was kind of struggling to see where the issues were too. And his understanding for what makes Fangio's defense so difficult for corners and for the secondary specifically is the adjustments from week to week. Because he said in terms of the actual coverage assignments, they play a lot of too high, so that helps. That helps them to disguise, but it's not necessarily that would be complicated for them. What makes things more complicated is from week to week, they seem to adjust quite a bit to what they're trying to do in terms of like coaching points, how they're adjusting, how they're handing off, stuff like that. So this week actually could be really bad for the Broncos because it's not just that A.J. Boye is suspended, but A.J. Boye is suspended. They lost Bryce Callahan against the Saints, and he might be out for the year. He hurt his foot. He's on injured reserve. He will definitely miss this game. He might not come back at all. They lost Essang Bassey, who is their starting nickel corner, or had become their starting nickel corner as Bryce Callahan moved outside. They lost him against the Chiefs, and he's out for the year. So this week, the Broncos secondary is Michael Ojemudia, who's played on and off, but he has gotten benched this year by Fangio. And then they're counting on guys, mostly. Elijah Holder, who's a safety, who plays some nickel. Will Parks, he got benched as a safety last year, but he became a nickel over down the stretch. So I would assume that he'll be a nickel. Duke Dawson. And then at that point, you're kind of just really stretching to find guys. So I would expect the Broncos to count on Devontae Bosby. I don't know if you watched the AAF, but Devontae Bosby was actually a really, really good corner in the AAF. He had a couple moments last year, and then he got hurt against the Chargers. And then this year he started camp. People considered him the third string corner, but then he ended up on the practice squad. Then at one point he was on the roster because Boye got hurt. Then he got cut, and then he ended up getting picked up by the Cardinals. Cardinals had him for a week, and then they caught him, and then the Broncos got him back. So the good news is they have him. The bad news is apparently Fangio must think so little of him that he's been off the roster a couple different times. But in terms of the rest of the secondary, yeah, basically the Broncos will be counting really, really heavily on their safeties to try and clean up. I would imagine there's going to be a lot of coverage busts underneath.
Joe, I got a question for you about Vic Fangio. He was the first Panthers coordinator in team history down here, and obviously it's kind of a homecoming for him in a lot of ways. We've seen Vic a couple times in recent years, notably the 49ers game twice, actually, in 2013, with two great defensive battles against that defense. But on a broader scale here, where is Vic with this team right now, do you think? Obviously, he's fairly early in his tenure, but the results are slowly, I guess, not coming in as fast as fans would like to see. Obviously, there have been some circumstances that have been difficult at times. Do you feel like Vic is secure moving forward?
So I think it was last week. There was actually a rumor. Someone started a rumor that Vic Fangio could get fired after the year. That was quickly kind of kiboshed by a bunch of the kind of the insiders who said that they talked to somebody and said he's about as safe as it gets. So we'll see. Again, there's four games left. I can't speak for all Broncos country, but I know for me, the fact that Vic Fangio has kind of kept the team afloat as much as he has, even as they've had six quarterbacks over his tenure, I'm cool with it. Like, the Broncos defense, again, they might fall off a lot without a secondary now, but the Broncos defense has been consistently good for the last 2 years, even as Vic Fangio had one last year. He made it for the better part of the year without Bradley Chubb. This year, he didn't have Von Miller for any of it. He lost his second best defensive tackle. So the amount of like issues and quarterback problems that Vic has had, I think that he's done a pretty good job. I want to give him another year and see maybe if the quarterback position gets better, and kind of see what happens. Because he knows defense. And honestly, you watch that game against the Chiefs. There's clearly good coaches in Denver. It's just a matter of kind of execution.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor the job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Right now, go to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
I understand. I think Vic is arguably the best defensive mind in the NFL that we have. I mean, outside of maybe Bill Belichick. But, you know, for me, it's going to be a fascinating game. And we at Blue Wire are sponsored by Bet Online. And unfortunately, this game is not on the board due to the COVID uncertainty. Christian McCaffrey did not practice today. It's looking like he's not going to be able to play, which has been sort of the trend the entire year. But these two franchises obviously have some recent history, going back to 2012 when Peyton Manning came in here with John Fox, and John Fox obviously spent plenty of time with this organization, speaking about the Carolina Panthers, and that was a pretty good game. Cam Newton was in his second year, and obviously we're not going to discuss the 2015 Super Bowl, especially John. I know that was a very hard day.
Let's not do that today.
And then 2016, another really good game. Gary Kubiak and the Broncos beat Carolina at the last second with a missed field goal by Graham Gano. So there's history between these two franchises. Obviously, it doesn't come close to any type of rivalry or anything. But I guess my question is, where do you see this game going? I'll get to my prediction, then John, you'll get to yours after that.
So all the uncertainty makes it really hard to say, because I think if Curtis Samuel plays as well as Robbie Anderson, it's going to present a lot of issues for the Broncos defense without their corners. I do think the COVID issues on defense gives the Broncos the ability to control the clock, because I think what they want to do is take the ball out of Drew Lock's hands as much as possible and just put him in basically like rookie mode, like basically where the only passes he has to complete are the easiest passes you can draw up. And even then, like, I don't know if they have faith that he'll do it, but I think that they're going to try and do that. I think if they can avoid long yardage situations, I think they can win, but I think it'll be close. So I would give them like a 3-point win for the Broncos, but I could see any outcome towards the Panthers as feasible as well.
Yeah, and for me, I'm going to – and, John, I want you to do the same thing. Is I'm going to assume that Curtis Samuel will play. I think it's very likely that DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey will not play. And John and I, we have seen this offense without Curtis Samuel in particular, and it was a disaster. They played against Chicago, and Chicago is a very good defense. I don't want to take anything away from them, but they couldn't move the ball very efficiently like they have throughout the year. So if I do think that if Samuel and Anderson do play, they have to find another receiver. Right? Most notably, it'd probably be Brandon Zylstra. But, you know, Carolina, this is going to be a first test for them because under Ron Rivera, this team – beginning his tenure, they were not very good after the bye weeks. That eventually changed. But this is the first opportunity that we have with this new coaching staff to see how they'll do after the bye. Kansas City is playing a consecutive road game, and they are traveling for a 1 p.m. start. So with all that being said, I do think this game will be pretty close. These teams are 4-8 for a record, I think, and certainly some of the personnel that Carolina is missing will not – help. But I'm going to trust that these guys, they prepared for this game and this opportunity for a couple weeks. So I'll go 23-20 Carolina. John, I'm interested in your take.
Yeah, you know, I have a hard time with it because, you know, if Curtis does play, and I'm going to work under that assumption too, I think he and Robbie can do some dynamic things together. You know, it's hard with DJ if he's going to be out, because he's been on a bit of a tear lately. And as we know, Bridgewater has missed a couple shots, obvious shots, the more that could have really padded his stats even more. So DJ's doing good work. McCaffrey, obviously, you know, is not going to play. And I know that's at least the all-in. It looks very unlikely he's going to play based on Matt Rhule's comments today. That's tough for him because, you know, his dad played in Denver and he was looking forward to this game as much as any. But I think, you know, back at home, it gives Carolina a chance to regroup. That was a tough loss a couple weeks ago, Billy, at Minnesota. You know, obviously they were in a competitive position all throughout this stretch where they're thinking, you know, playoffs aren't realistic, but they're still kind of in the mix in that Minnesota game. And to lose the way they did, I think it's very disappointing. So obviously with the COVID issues, from a preparation standpoint, they're locked in, they're focused. I just worry about the run defense with some of the numbers they're missing up front, potentially with some of their core guys on the interior missing, not only from the first level, but from the second level. And we see what Denver was able to do in recent weeks here in terms of the running game, especially last week. So I think Vic Fangio presents challenges in terms of every time he plays Carolina, it seems, whether it's with John Fox's staff in Chicago or with Denver or with Harbaugh in San Francisco, it's always like a 9, 12, 15-point output. It's so frustrating playing against this guy defensively. So I think it's going to be a low scoring game. I think like maybe 2017, I could swing either way on this. I really don't have a pick either way, but I think it'll be like a 2017 Denver or Carolina. Joe, really appreciate your time. Let me get some plugs in for you. Where can we find your work and where can we direct our listeners here to follow you?
Yeah. So I talk about the Broncos at milehighreport.com. So if you ever want to hear about the Broncos, maybe we'll find a quarterback at some point and then it'll be exciting. I also, I talk about the Broncos at Cover2Broncos. And then you can also find me on Twitter at @Joro_NFL. Occasionally, I also like to talk about good NFL teams. So that might be fun for you too.
Yeah. Joe does some great work with the draft too. I can endorse that.
Awesome. Well, Joe Rouse, we appreciate you, man. And be well, be safe out there and continued success. And we'll keep following your work, my man.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Have a great night, guys.
No problem. You too, buddy. Catch us next time. Billy Marshall, John Ellis right here on the Roar Podcast on Blue Wire. Football is back in full swing. You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on all the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team and player coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network.
Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.